This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
We got a lot to get through today. New stuff going on in the Nancy Guthrie and Alec Murtaugh case, and Bob Mott is with us to help break it all down. We'll start with Nancy. She was taken from her Tucson home 5 months ago, in case you've been living under a rock. 84 years old. Just in case. Nancy who? 84 years old. Pulled out in the middle of the night by someone who showed up armed and masked on her own doorbell camera. 50,000 tips, $1 million in reward money. FBI and Pima County Sheriff running parallel investigations, although seemingly at odds a lot of the time. And nobody can name a single suspect. Meanwhile, notes claiming to be from the abductor say Nancy is dead at a completely separate person has been emailing TMZ claiming he has the whole case on a phone. But you need to give me a Bitcoin and I'll tell you where I'm hitting the phone, and the phone's a silver platter and la da 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 da. We're going to get into all of that today. Like I said, Bob Mott, defense attorney with us, Defense Diaries. You can get his podcast, YouTube, wherever you get podcasts. And of course, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis program. Start here. 5 months, 50,000 tips, more than $1 million in reward money. The FBI hasn't publicly named a single person of interest yet. A lot of people, Bob, are speculating. What's taking so long here? But let's take a look at it from an angle of prosecuting a case like this. You really got to make sure those T's are crossed and those I's are dotted, and not inversely the other way. Do you think that maybe they have some leads back somewhere, and they're making sure that it's going to stand up really good if you're going to get the person arrested and put him in a cell? Or are they just hitting a dead end? From your experience in the legal world, what's your thoughts?
Well, potentially, yes. I think they probably have some leads.
Yeah.
Whether or not they're strong enough to bring a case, because at this point it's a no-body case.
Yep.
You know, but look, we've seen the trend in the last couple of decades. No-body cases, you know, it used to be the old thing, no body, no crime.
Yep.
Well, that's not the case anymore. They've been trying no-body cases and been trying them successfully. So I don't think that that's the final impediment. I think it's an impediment if they have somebody who maybe checks a few boxes, but we don't want somebody who's checking a few boxes. We want the fucking actual person that did it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that there's my defense attorney coming out. Like we want to catch the actual perp or perpetrators of this. We don't want somebody that's just somebody that they might be able to cram a square peg into a round hole with, because that's not justice for the Guthrie family. It's certainly not justice for Nancy. So if I think we can all assume, sadly, at this point, that she's no longer with us. So I don't know, man. I tend to think that they probably don't have a real strong lead, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because there's so many boxes you want to check here, and it's going to be up to the prosecutor in the DA in the case of, okay, this is enough. If they have somebody on their radar before they go and make an arrest or anything like that. If you look at some other cases, sometimes we look at cases and go, well, my God, you've had a lot. It took you this long to arrest the person. Like David, for example, that case, the D4VD. Like we were talking forever. Like this is a cornucopia of incriminating shit. But it took them some time to really get there, to be sure that, you know, everything completely checked out before they made that arrest. That's a case that's a little more black and white, if you will, or just more direct. There's so much nuance here. So much we don't know how much is actually part of the case, not part of the case, evidence that's actually there, or just nuance. That's got to make it a lot harder from a prosecutorial standpoint to I guess pull the trigger on somebody, but first you gotta have somebody to pull the trigger on.
Totally. And look, we know for a fact that they have thoroughly vetted everyone in the inner circle.
Yep.
What I'm saying, like everyone in that's where they're starting now. Those are going to be their strongest leads. And they're going to do all the work necessary in order to check their alibis, vet them completely, and clear them. you know? Yeah. So I feel at this point, based on what we know, which is pretty limited, frankly,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, they've been pretty tight lipped, you know, without we get the occasional little breadcrumb gets dropped mm-hmm. for us, but you know, it's really nothing of substance that I feel like we can feel pretty secure about the fact that it was nobody in the inner circle mm-hmm. and that it was nobody that the inner circle hired unless yeah. they were, you know, excellent at hiding the paper trail, you know, I mean, cause yeah. it's the paper trail where you're always going to be able to kind of get those murder for hire type things. And then again, you're looking at, you know, what's the motive there, you know, and obviously the motive is usually money. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it's a perplexing case in the sense that if it was random, you know, they might never get anybody. Mm-hmm. But why would it have been random? Like, I frankly love your theory, like you and Robin's theory that they were
gem. Yeah, yeah, there was a neighbor. It's simple.
It's as plausible as anything else I've heard.
It keeps it simple because you got to match it to what you see and what you know. And when you look at Porch Guy, you're like, this is not a complex operation. And people keep wanting to make it complex because it's because there's so much air to fill the gaps with because no one's saying much, which means they're either doing a really good job of keeping their lips shut or there's really nothing to go on. And circling back, you know, so using our conjecture and saying they'll eventually get someone, I'm really curious about this, Bob. I know Nanos's department is leading the investigation, we think, because that's what they're saying. Do you think this is going to ultimately then be prosecuted at the state level or a federal level? And regardless of that, throw on top of that, they get someone and say they got a lot on him. Say he's got a cell phone on him. And maybe even confesses on that cell phone, does something, gets a lot of digital footprint, you know, best case scenario. How hard is it going to be for either state or federal to prosecute him, given all the missteps that they've had on the on collecting evidence, Nanos' statements, all these things?
I think my inkling would be that it would go federal. I hope that the feds are still involved mm-hmm. more than Pima is, just because of competency issues. And if with the kidnapping, you know, you've got the ability to be able to charge federally for sure, mm-hmm. based on what we know. You know, obviously, if the investigation is you know, got some issues, I mean, I'm feeling more comfortable putting feds on the stand than I am Pima County on the stand. You know, like from a defense attorney's right. perspective, if you're like, okay, I'm going to give you a choice of two agencies to choose from to be able to cross-examine and hammer away at their investigation. So I'm going to give you Pima County Sheriff's Department or the FBI. I'm picking Pima County Sheriff's Department all day. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like there's just a cornucopia of things that we could point out that just weren't done properly, at least at this distance. You know what I'm saying? So you would hope that it would go federal, but
who makes that call?
As you see with Luigi Mangione, they mm-hmm. both made the call.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, I mean, right.
It's like,
but that's when they're cooperating, you know. But since it looks like, you know, so say it's what we have the conjecture on the outside is that Pima County and the feds aren't getting along super well and cooperating as well as they might otherwise be. And so, say you have a situation where people really aren't talking, they don't want to agree on anyone. Who does it stay with Pima County then if they don't want to release it? Is that do they have the right to hold it?
I mean, right. It's their jurisdiction.
I mean, even if it's federal, though, even if there's federal crimes involved,
I think that they Pima can't stop them if there's been federal crimes that have been violated. Then
right.
you have a Luigi, like, because I don't know how well the agencies work together in Luigi Mangione. Yeah. You know, like we don't, and we had multiple agencies involved there.
Yeah, and multiple states too.
And that's what I'm saying. Yeah. You know what I mean? So.
At the end of the day here, I mean, they'll call local. They'll call Pima County officers to the stand if we ever get to a trial somewhere. They're going to call Pima. They're going to call feds. They're going to call them both to this. It's like it's like an and or of who's going to be able to be called to the stand if they're in part of the investigation into this case. So the very there's a harsh reality here that whoever they find and blame for this, and maybe is the person who does it, whoever they get, you're going to have Nanos on the stand at some point. And you're going to have a defense attorney. I mean, my God, that's a horror story no matter what with Nanos on the stand.
You might not have Nanos on the stand.
You don't think that the defense would call Nanos on the stand no matter what just to
what, their own witness? Just to like, you can't.
Just because he seems like he'd be an easy one to trip up to get to say shit that's going to point to reasonable doubt.
You can't call a. Your own witness simply to impeach him. It's not allowed. So
well,
like,
it's not the intent. I mean, I think it would just naturally happen.
I mean, it's hard because it's a direct examination. You know what I'm saying? It changes the dynamic of it.
But why wouldn't you call the sheriff up for this if you're prosecuting this case or if you're defending this case? Certainly, prosecutorial wise, I could see why you wouldn't want to, but. Do you see a world where they wouldn't put Nanos on the stand? Really?
I mean, how often do you
see? It's not the investigator.
Like, think about this. Think about any case that you're dealing with. And a lot of cases that we cover, you have sheriff departments, and it's pretty rare to see the actual elected sheriff to be the one that's testifying. It's going to be the guys that were and gals that were out there doing the work, you know, that were actually conducting the investigation. He's the overseer. You know what I'm saying? That's not to say that there's not some connective tissue to where there's not some relevance to get him on the stand. But, you know, when you're nitpicking in an investigation, you're doing exactly that. And what are you getting from him if it's a situation where you're attacking collection or, you know, things that they didn't do specifically that he had no hand in actually doing himself? You know what I'm saying? So. I hear what you're saying. Like he's for the defense. He's a tasty character.
delicious delicacy
character. Yeah. I'd say probably the only thing to call him on is that as I'm going through my mind too, and I completely agree, Bob, you know, they're going to call the investigators, the interviewers, the people actually doing the investigation. He's like their public affairs front man for it, which you wouldn't call. Right. Unless, do you see any way they'd call him because he might be in charge of the training that they received when it came to evidence collection or something like that?
If that's the case, then I suppose so. But I don't.
It's a stretch. That. Yeah, I know. I'm with you. It's a stretch.
He's not training anybody.
But he seems so well trained. He really goes by the book. But
I say that because it's actually the sheriff that actually allocates the funds for training, says what training they should get, and also here's actually as I'm thinking about it live, could they call him? And have him testify as to why he removed a certain investigator from a spot. In other words, he had senior people, again, pure conjecture, what we heard on the outside, you know, removing a senior investigator, putting a junior investigator in charge of this. Could he be called to answer to why he had the personnel shifts and changes he had that impacted the investigation?
I mean, who's calling him? Is it the defense? Because remember, I don't want to,
the defense.
Like, I mean, in terms of direct examining him, it's a much different beast than being able to cross examine him. You know, he would go up there as not a friendly witness and he knows that you're up there, not his buddy, right? You're going to be trying to extract information that's not helpful to the prosecution from him. So he would be a combative witness. I don't know that he would rise to the level of, you know, you being able to get the judge to say, okay, well, he's hostile. You know, I want to be able to cross him. Like, I don't know that you'd be able to get there with that. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it's kind of got the feeling of the way that we were talking about the Moscow police before the Koberger arrest.
Yeah.
You know, and I like think back to that, harken back, like, let's pull up some coverage from the shit talking that was going on about those guys, that they're over their skis. I mean, you had the families screaming at them. Everyone was going at them. Again, we'll find out if there ever is an arrest. I mean, you know, every crime doesn't get solved. That's fact.
No. Yeah. You know,
I mean, that is just fact.
Do you think, I mean, not that it's up to him if he's going to testify or anything like that, but I mean, just put his ego into to the mix of all of this here. I feel, I mean, my conjecture is this is a guy who's going to be itching to testify for whoever he needs to, just because he wants to be in the public and he likes to spout. I mean, he thinks he's doing the right thing. He thinks he's arguing for his side, but so many times he just puts his foot in his mouth, but then he goes, that was delicious, and doesn't seem to notice while the rest of the world goes, what the hell was that? I mean, I don't know. It'll be very fascinating. I really appreciate kind of like showing the other side of that. Because to me as a layperson, I go, well, why wouldn't he? That does make sense. Why? Maybe he won't. It's something certainly to consider. Let's talk about the notes for a second. Obviously, there's the first two that have been talked about endlessly, initially in IP, saying we want a couple millions in Bitcoin. And then a little bit later, another from the same IP saying she's dead. Sorry, in so many words, not asking for more Bitcoin. And then that kind of ends from that IP. Then you have this conglomerate of emails that TMZ is getting that Harvey's talking about all the time,
yep.
Claiming that, oh, that they didn't do it, but they have information. They know where she is. They have video. They have images on a secret phone that's hidden somewhere. And if you give us one Bitcoin, 60 grand about, depending on the day of the week, then we'll tell you where to find that phone. And that phone's going to tell you everything you need to know. But they're not going to give you any proof that they have any of it whatsoever. These are, I don't believe they're the same people by any
it's
stretch
a prince
of the
from
imagination.
Algeria.
Yeah, I mean, so let's. There are two sets. I don't want to converge the two as so many do because it is confusing. But they are not the same. They are not the same IP. There's no one that can clearly say these two are truly connected. There's not anything that points to it. In fact, it points opposite. When you go back to the originals, though, Bob, I mean, it's really isn't much of a legal question, just more of a conjecture, your opinion from watching this question as a human. What's your take? I mean, the idea that a kidnapper asks for the Bitcoin, that seems somewhat realistic, but then she's dead. Sorry, we don't need any money.
Right. Yeah.
What the hell is that? I mean, does that tell you right away that first demand came from someone who really didn't have her to begin with? But why send anything? Why even put any other communication into the ether? Every time you cast that line out there, there's some sort of chance you could be found out. Why risk it? Why even say it? Or did they suddenly have a moment of moral clarity, or is it all just bunk?
It smells a lot like, and I'm no profiler. Our brother here, Robin Dreek, is going to be far closer to that than I would be. To me, it smells like a mitigation letter. You know, it's like it reads the one where, you know, that she's buried with nature is it really feels like if that this is under the premise that this person is the person that either actually has knowledge or had a hand in it, right? Like, so if it's just somebody making shit up, then it doesn't mean anything. So, but if this is a person that is involved or was involved and they're kind of laying that out there, they're kind of trying to say, look, things went awry. Like I'm trying to tell you right now, this wasn't our intent. This wasn't my intent. Mm-hmm. This was not something that was planned. This just happened in order to try to soften the blow if and when this is the person or persons that did something and this person is taken into custody and ultimately charged. Whether or not that's effective, it's bizarre, man.
Does that soften the blow, though?
No.
I mean, at the end of the day, you took her, she died in your custody. Does that matter one iota to a judge, whether it's murder one, murder two, manslaughter, whatever the hell they charge? Does the fact like, well, but judge, I said it was an accident that she died. That kid doesn't hold any water, right?
I mean, if you put it out there early enough, the defense is certainly going to argue it. The question is whether or not a jury's going to buy it.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? It's like, because you see it all the time. Like they're always using context clues from all of our social media and our messengers and our text messages, you know, and they're building cases on stuff like that, wherein they're trying to prove intent from what people typed in a text message or said in Messenger. You know what I'm saying? So, mm-hmm. I mean, the defense would argue it. Like they'd say, look, they put it out there early that this wasn't intentional, that the intent wasn't to kill Nancy Guthrie, but ultimately something else happened. And then again, the problem is going to be, have they recovered the body? And yeah. once they have recovered the body, is there anything that they could do forensically to determine the cause of death?
Yeah.
You know, so like that's the thing. Like if you have a situation, say you have a situation like you're, you know, jewel thief gone horribly wrong
mm-hmm.
and you know, they get made in there and Nancy's about to scream. So they cover her mouth and they're like, what do we do? And we're like, oh my God, let's just bring her with us. And then they have her with her and they're like, okay, we're just going to let her out at McDonald's or whatever. And she dies, you know, of a heart attack.
Yeah.
Like, well, like in the middle of the thing and they're like, oh my God, like what do we do? You know what I mean? Like what do we do? And so, cause like, who are they talking to?
Yeah.
Like I had a client that called me up and said, all right, I am actually still in the process of committing this crime. You know, like it was something that went terribly wrong. But at this point, for all intents and purposes, I still have Nancy Guthrie kidnapped. However, here's the thing. She's dead, but we still have her with us. You know what I mean? Like as an attorney, I think ethically I'd be obligated because it's an ongoing crime that I'd have to report it.
Yeah.
You know, which is a strange thing. I mean, if I am made aware by my client of a future crime, the privilege does not supersede that.
Sure.
Like,
sure.
If I know that somebody is going to be committing a crime in the future and they've told me when they're going to do it, being a lawyer doesn't mean that you don't alert law enforcement because you do. Like, so that's like, you know, things that we're talking about for privilege are things that have happened in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So like future stuff. So, but I mean, man, it's a weird situation though, isn't it? It's like, yeah. you know, I don't know.
If like, it's weird. So
like
things that are weird don't fit to me.
This is something that has been rattling around in my brain. In terms of the notes, because nothing's come of them, right?
Yeah.
Like nothing is like they make these ransoms, but then they don't show up for the dough when people, yeah. you know, it's like when you kind of look at it, if you're in Tony and Robin, especially like if you're looking at this thing and you're like, all right, if you're going to send this thing out and it's not real, who is benefiting the most from doing that? Like currently, like out of anybody in the world or multiple people in the world, who is profiting the most from sending a bogus ransom?
Well, who's ever talking about it, really? So, I mean, if you're the one that's getting the notes, that would be TMZ.
I mean, you know, there's like on a different level. I mean, YouTube has had a lot of coverage, too.
Yeah, I mean, because then we all talk about it.
I'm looking into all of them.
Yeah, but if the source where the notes are going to TMZ, I mean, yeah, I mean, they're going to run with it. I mean, it's almost like here's a silver platter of content. Like, you know, either you can pretend it's not real or maybe it isn't real, or you can play it up like it's something, and everyone's going to click on it regardless.
Crazy to me. Like, yeah. I'm thinking more like content creators. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because like TMZ, I'm just saying it's a theory.
Like maybe it's a rogue content creator that is sending these out, so it creates more to talk about on the case. I mean, it's not a crazy idea, Bob, at all.
It's not a crazy idea.
No,
I don't know. You know, I mean, and who? Like, if you're a content creator, you're not going to take the risk of sending it to TMZ or to the feds. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to send it to law enforcement. Like to me, when that first started happening, I'm like, all right, because I'm always thinking of like if it's not real,
mm-hmm.
who's benefiting from it?
Everyone that's promoting it.
True.
I don't know.
There has been more notes. there have been other notes that content creators have gotten that they've never publicized. I know that. I know TMZ has obviously run to the air with all of them, but I know there's others who have, we have not received anything here, but I know other people who have actually received or basically fake ransom letters, or maybe they're real. We don't know what they are, but they're ransom letters. But again, there's so much phishing going on right now, I think, in this, for anybody that will run with it. And somebody out there, I'm guessing, is hoping, a fake person is out there hoping, you know, one of these creators is going to pay me a Bitcoin for their content.
And just making a shit ton of money off this case.
Yeah, that's an interesting angle.
So if you remove one thing, the reason why at the very beginning I was not on board with these letters at all was because it doesn't fit what kidnappers do. It just doesn't, the way they were handled, the way they're delivered, all that. It's a one-off. It's never been done this way before. If you're going to do a kidnapping for profit, nothing fits. Except the one thing that got people believing it was they said there's specific information that's not been shared with the public that said they had inside knowledge of the house. So we have to take it on the word of the family and Harvey Levin that there is specific information that AI couldn't generate that made this believable. If you remove that one fact that no one knows what the data in that actually is, no one even be paying attention to these letters because they wouldn't be saying they're all spam fishers because it doesn't fit any behavior pattern that anyone has ever been done before. That's why I'm highly skeptical of all the letters from the very beginning, because it just does not fit what people would do. And then let's do our thought experiment again on, all right, so let's assume that the letters are right, or you want to assume the letters are right. You look at Porch Guy. You look at how he dressed. You look at the amount of money he spent and didn't spend on his outfit. Walmart, the lack of covertness of it. Although he covered himself really well, it was just it just didn't ring as a true professional, someone with a few reps. So I love Bob's analogy of what probably happened from his context. You know, he goes in there, they go in there because they knew a jewelry thing's in town and they thought there was going to be jewelry, no jewelry. They looked around for 41 minutes, couldn't find any. She wakes up, they say, oh my God, we got to take her, panic escalation. Low percentiles for that, but they do happen. They remove her and then they're going to dump her off at a McDonald's and she dies along the way. The last thing you're going to do then is, oh my God, I'm sorry. If you're so stupid that you have to actually rob someone and take their money because you can't provide a living for yourself another way, the last thing you're thinking of is doing something like that. You're running. You're not communicating. You're dumping bodies and running. That's why, again, every single letter that's come out, if it hadn't been for the one detail that people are saying, a few people that only have knowledge that these things have specific things that only they could do, know about, and not AI, even though I'm a believer of that's one degree of separation, someone knows that house, knows what was inside, knows where Nancy was at. So
what do we know what those things that only the kidnapper would
only
know?
Conjecture I've heard is that they knew where what she was wearing and where she placed her Apple Watch.
Where is that?
Again, I haven't sourced it. And that's why I'm so skeptical of it, because if you actually pump into AI, you know, what's an 84-year-old woman typically wear to bed if she uses this kind of lifestyle? If she wears an Apple Watch and if they have photos of the house that have been collected over, you know, the last 10 or 20 years from Savannah being in and out and doing things like that, there's a lot of conjecture AI can put together to kind of give you a close enough to do this. I did it with my own family and I was like, wow, that's some scary shit. So I'm highly skeptical
of letters. How many pictures of Nancy Guthrie are out in the public sphere in terms of like shit that her daughters have posted, her kids have posted, like on Facebook? I mean,
they did specials with her on the Today Show.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, does there exist any photographs in the public sphere that
there's
an Apple Watch?
I
don't know, man. She was wearing pajamas. She was wearing a nice flowered set of pajamas.
Exactly. Without knowing the exact verbiage, it's hard to say what weight is on it. Right. You know, if it's like, well, the watch was in a case and the case looked like this and it was on the nightstand. Like, even then, you could still even someone go, well, I saw her on Today's Show and they were in the bedroom and one could make some wild guesses here. I don't know. It's not solid. I'm not saying it's not solid, but there's not enough info in the ether for us lay people to really be able to say, right, yes or no.
That's why I'm still living in the world of maybe on this one.
So much maybe.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, look, But the things that we're talking about, I guarantee you, this is it's all the stuff they're looking into.
Yeah.
You know, because like the first thing they have to figure out is whether or not the ransom notes are legit. Now, if they do contain things, like to me, it would have to go beyond, you know, like everybody charges their Apple Watch on their, yeah, their nightstand, you know, and it's like my thing's like right here. I've got my
From what I understand, I believe, and I could be off on this again, because there's so much damn reporting on this. And this is what I heard yesterday when I was on with Nancy Grace. Maureen O'Connell was on with me, and she's the one last week who retired FBI who made the statement last week that she was 75% sure that they were on the right track, that there's probably an arrest coming soon, essentially. She said that to Megyn Kelly and made a big story. When we were talking yesterday about this, she had mentioned, if my memory serves me correct, I apologize if it's not, but I'm pretty sure she said this yesterday with on the show, that the watch was on the ground. I've heard other people say that too. Again, it's not that specific. It's on the ground. You're charging the watch there. It may be falling on the ground. It's not a crazy thought to think that if there's a struggle getting somebody out of the room, that maybe the Apple Watch fell on the ground. I don't know.
I mean, man.
Yeah, like, I need more than that.
God, that none of that feels like it. Is somebody claiming that that was what was in one of the ransom notes, that the Apple Watch was?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't know.
It's more specific than just there's an Apple Watch she left behind. But is it as specific as it appears to be? I mean,
fine, because all right. So then we assume. So if you wanted to say that those, like they said, the first two are the legit ones because it came from them, it shows that the intent was not to kidnap, and the intent was to go in there and get something else. Because again, if the intent was to get money, there's ways to get money. But they're not doing it.
Could this be a complete one-off, Robin, too? I mean, because we're talking about, like, statistically what people do if they're going to kidnap. If this person's never kidnapped a person in their life, had no intention of kidnapping a person in their life, and this shit all went wrong and she dies in their custody, is it a crazy far stretch to think that maybe if they're an empathetic person that they would send a note saying, we're sorry, she's dead? If that is just, you know, they just don't know what the hell to do. They don't know how to play this game. They've never played this game before.
Makes a lot of sense because it's not fitting any pattern of kidnappings we've ever seen before. Yeah. It shows this person has not done this before.
Yeah.
And like you said, and granted, I'm on board with the fact that the BAUs weighed in with Savannah to make that second statement that the family put out, because it's an extremely empathetic statement, which would correspond with the second letter being very empathetic, because you want to do matching, right? Mm-hmm. Emotional matching. It's a powerful tool to compel someone, to inspire someone to take an action. And which would make sense, again, if the intent was not to take her, it was a byproduct of something botched that they did wrong. That makes a lot of sense to me compared to anything else.
Yeah. No one keeps an Apple Watch in a case. I don't even know what that means. I've been wearing an Apple Watch for 5 years.
Oh, not in a case. No, it was on the ground.
Okay. Well, yeah. Oh, wait, what? So wait, Lynn.
Oh, is somebody saying a case?
Fell on the ground.
Like I haven't heard that. I don't know anything about a case.
I don't know what that is.
No.
If it's me, if I'm law enforcement, I need something like, okay, you know, if the ransom note said, okay, well, they're on the kitchen table, there was a New York Times crossword puzzle from Tuesday that was half completed. Like that is something. And if that was a fact, then I know that somebody was in that house saying some shit like the Apple Watch was on the floor. I mean, like, unless it's accurate. I mean, I guess if it's accurate,
it could be. Yeah, and that's we just don't know.
There's one more thing on the FBI's BAU being involved in responding to those, you know, working with Savannah to respond empathetically. Just because they crafted a response doesn't mean they thought it was legit.
True.
They could have been very 50-50 on this. Again, we don't know because we haven't heard from them. We'll never hear from them. But I mean, I would do that because if you're going, remember, we said it yesterday on the show. I say it all the time. In the world that I lived in, all intelligence is good intelligence, even if it rules something out. And so if you took an action because you believed it to be legit and you put an empathetic statement out there that should garner a response you're looking for, if it doesn't garner the response you're looking for, that's intelligence you can now move on. Because now it's saying that this might not be as legit as we thought it was because we didn't get the response we should have gotten from this empathetic statement that Savannah put out.
Yeah,
that's, you got nothing to lose. To something else.
Nothing to lose. Yeah, I mean,
if you guys are, if we're going with the bungling, you know, the bungling jewel thief theory, and you know, and she passes away for natural causes because of the stress.
She's 84.
Right. I mean, it's like she's horrified, right? I mean, you're in the desert, man.
Yeah.
You know, like to me, this thing, like I don't know, is Othram handling the?
Yeah.
Are they handling, like, you know, and like everybody that knows me knows I'm a huge fan of that lab. And, you know, if they're going to be able to pull a profile off of it, then if anybody is, it's going to be them. To me, I just don't think this is going to be a case that's going to get solved through forensic evidence. I think it's going to be somebody's going to talk.
Yeah,
you know, like I get that's where I'm at with this thing, because the one thing that I know for certain is that there had to have been more than one person involved. I think that if you're going in on a jewel heist, mm-hmm. I mean, is that to say that there don't exist like individual guys that go in and you know, are jewel thieves? I'm sure there are. I think most of the times you're going to have a couple of guys. You know, you're going to have a little bit of a crew because of the unknowns. You know, it's like, and if you've got multiple people involved, and if you have somebody who had to go out to the desert somewhere and you know, bury Nancy's body somewhere out in the desert where no one's ever going to find it, you know, the odds are that at some point somebody knows something, and the question then becomes, when is that person going to talk?
You know, time will tell.
Yeah, bungling jewelers typically one, two tops, and typically it's person that's very close to the first person, so there's no compromise on that. So it's kind of 50-50 on whether they speak or not after a period of time.
Yeah. Time will tell. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in. The links are in the description.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Brewski and Robin Dree.
Nancy Guthrie notes. Oh, yeah, there's a big pile of them. And are you as confused as I am by them? We're going to try and make some sense of everything we've been hearing this week, from this source, that source, the other source, the source of the source of that source to the next source. Let's talk about the notes, because there isn't just one. There's a pile and they don't agree. One supposedly came from the kidnapper and says Nancy's buried with nature. A completely different guy is telling TMZ that time is no longer of the essence. An outlet says the killer apologized. Another says they never did. That's where we're at. Retired FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendaffer is here to help us untangle it, along with retired FBI Special Agent Robin Drake to help us untangle it as well. So we have two retired FBI people on the road in various secretive locations that we won't reveal. So I think this is great because, you know, Megan had the one person on that said they're 75% there, and then somebody else is like, nah, not at all. Let's see where we go here. Jen, you follow this closer, I think, than anybody I know. Untangle this twisted web of notes, and did they apologize? Did they not apologize? What conclusions have you come to this week?
Well, I tell you what, Tony and Robin, this is the thing. The whole source situation is out of control. I used to think it was one source for everyone, but now, because all the source information is different for everyone, now I know there must be four or five sources because they're all saying something else. So I finally got, at least on note two, down to the nitty gritty. Brianna Whitley, who was with a Arizona station and saw the note, she came out and told us very specifically about the second note. So I at least feel confident that the second note, and I don't think she'd lie, really watched for tells with that. She has no reason to lie. She's not with the station anymore. So she can say whatever she wants. And so finally we have, I think, the truth, not from a source, but from the person who read it with their own eyes.
Because she's with Crime Junkie now, right? Is that accurate?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. And she was with, was it K-Gun or the other one? One of the other TV stations in Tucson.
With the Phoenix station.
Okay. So she was in the close to the market there. What's in this note too? Let's start there. That the one that she talked about, and why do we think there's legitimacy to note number two?
So based on the FBI's responses, BAU's response, having five different times that the family, which was clearly driven by notes, they're looking down, addressed the perpetrators. Mm-hmm. To me, it's clear that the Bureau and Pima County Sheriff's Office believed these were real. They even did a press conference on it. They discussed how there were things in the notes that no one else could know, one of them being her clothing. I know a lot of people say, yeah, but was the crime scene really secure? Could somebody have picked out the floodlight? Well, how did they know about her, what was on her nightstand? How did they know what she was dressed in? So I think that's why the Bureau ran full force, that they believed the notes. Both of these notes are the two that they believe. And secondarily, Savannah said on national television, she believes these two notes are real.
Mm-hmm. So note one from this same person who would have given note number two, note one would have been the one that said what?
So all we know in note one is, and what's recently come out, is that they said, Savannah, we have your mother, or words to that effect. I don't have my notes in front of me, but sure. that was addressed directly to Savannah. And that's where they said basically $4 million and it's going to go up after that, or else we're going to kill your mom. But we haven't seen, and she didn't tell us, meaning Brianna, we don't know, other than from source information, what's in that note, the first one.
Sure. So that's note one, essentially what the basis of what we understand is, we have your mom, we want $4 million in Bitcoin. Is that essentially as accurate as we can be on that? And then note two came from the same source, the same place that note one came from. So that's how those two are connected. That's the one Brianna was talking about. And this one is the one that says she has passed away, correct?
Well, it says a lot more than that.
Okay, tell me that. Give me that, because there's so many stories on they apologize, they don't apologize. This version, this note that connects to note one, what's in this note that Brianna's talked about?
Well, specifically that she accidentally died, mm-hmm. buried in nature. There was nothing you could have done to prevent the outcome. Mm-hmm. And sorry. Those are kind of the main pointers. There was an apology, according to Brianna.
Okay. Robin, I know you got questions, so I want to ask one more quick one here.
Yeah, go ahead, Adam.
What, because we're hearing the other reporting out there of, are we talking about several different notes here when we hear the one saying that there's notes that came out that said she died, but there was not an apology? Is that a different note? Is that different people? And it's just kind of all in the minutiae here getting discombobulated and mixed in?
Well, it's interesting because TMZ says there was no apology. That's an exact quote from Harper.
Yeah,
there's no apology. But you hear Brianna said at the end, the salutation is, I'm sorry. So it's so confusing. So it made me wonder, did TMZ actually get a different note, different verbiage in their note than what Brianna got?
Have they been able to connect that note to these notes, or the only two that we have a true connection to are the ones to the TV station, note one and note two that Brianna's talked about? Do we know if the TMZ note where Harvey says there was no apology is directly related? It's like just another version of the same note, or is that somebody completely different that somehow kind of got a whiff of, they want to hear that she's dead and maybe I can profit that way in some way, shape or form?
My understanding is the first two sets of notes, no matter which station they went to, are seen as legitimate. And we kind of know that, right? Because we saw what the Guthries did after even the second note, after the sixth, right? That's when the other notes came in. But I'm not convinced that TMZ had the exact same version of verbiage in their second note. Mm-hmm. At least it doesn't make any sense to me that Harvey Levin says no apology. And no. Brianna specifically says at the very end, the salutation is, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's why I'm wondering if it's the same people or just... two variations of the note. They apologized to the TV station and their note, and the one they sent to Harvey had no apology, but from the same person. I guess trying to determine if it's the same source is the question. And I don't think we know the answer to that question yet. Robin, go ahead.
And I apologize if my connection's been a little spotty. The intent, that's what I'm not getting on this is... So, and I'm with you that BAU worked with Savannah and her family because that second message they put out was extremely empathetic in response to an assumption that they believe that second note, which is extremely empathetic, you know, apologizing for the death. That is unheard of in anything. I mean, this whole thing's been unheard of, but if your intent is to get money, either through a wrench attack, through ransom, for any of these things, that is exactly what not to do. It has just never happened before by an individual or even groups. And Tony said he looked up one that there was one having to do with cartels, with it was an accidental, you know, boo-boo hit that they're apologizing for. So not to start some sort of cartel war. But what do you think then is the link between or what their outcome that they're seeking? If they're apologizing for her dying, I just don't get it. I just makes no sense. Does it make any sense to you?
So this is my take on that. I really think that this was preemptive. Thank you. Sorry about that.
Oh, good.
I truly think this was preemptive. And when I say that, the only thing that makes sense to me is these individuals going, oh, crap, she died. We're going to get caught. Is death penalty in Arizona? We're going to act contrite. And this is all completely staged baloney. I don't think she's buried everyone. I think that the words in there, I think, are such nonsense. They tried to relay this empathetic message. And clearly, that is what was received. We talked about this. Remember how BAU believed they must be, you know, have some sort of heart that they
can get to,
because look at how they termed everything. So BAU clearly thinks that they were reachable in this empathetic way. But I think it's more sinister than that. I really was thinking about a case I had, and it made me shift thinking, you know what? This is about preparing for capture. And when we're caught, look, we didn't mean her to die. See, we wrote it right there. We feel terrible about it. See, we wrote it right there. We tried to tell the family this wasn't right or her fault, their fault. So I see those notes as BS, to be honest, in terms of what they're saying. I don't think she was buried. I think they just hit her.
Yeah, so you're seen as preemptive in case they're caught, expecting to be caught, which is even more shocking than I haven't been caught yet. That is literally the only explanation I can come up with on that one, too. If they're real, again, I'm always going the world of if until someone says otherwise. That's rough.
So the thinking is that of someone who's not experienced in doing something like this, clearly, if they're like writing apology notes, getting prepared to be caught. Oh, we're sorry. I mean, that's not super common to have that take place. That's rather bizarre. So when we're trying, if these are the people, if these two notes we're talking about to the Tucson TV stations, we have her, we want $4 million, and now she's dead and we're sorry. The second we're dead and she's dead and we're sorry note, are they asking for money in that one too for the body, or is it just she's dead, we're sorry, have a nice day?
Yeah, she's dead, we're sorry, it's a big accident. I forgot to mention one more thing in that note. She said that they were not aware of how serious her health condition was, which I found very interesting. And they also mentioned a heart. They think it was a heart issue.
Yeah.
So they actually mention all of that in the note, which also says mope. If this is even true, you know, mope did not do their research pointed in that direction and went for it.
So does this still support? Go ahead.
I was going to say, does that make you think that Nancy was the intended target here? Or is it like, shit, I'm still sticking with my theory that they went to the wrong house and Nancy ended up becoming collateral damage. But does that make you think that Nancy was the intended target here to get $4 million? Or did Nancy become the side hustle of, well, we didn't get what we came for, but we ended up with an old lady. Let's see what we can get for her.
I don't think so. I think she was 100% the intended target. Remember that first ransom note was addressed to Savannah. Savannah, mm-hmm. We have your mother. So I think just the mentioning of her tells the pointer that they had to even focus on getting Nancy. Nancy was a soft target. Mm-hmm. Savannah was.
And you still think it's an organized wrench attack that involved multiple people or an organization that did it? Or is this more individual look to you? Any idea?
I'm definitely half and half. I could see it fitting that because just like the last wrench attack before this, right, the day before, they got two teenagers to do this. I think it's potluck who you end up getting that wants to do these types of attacks, to be honest. But on the second side of it is... And again, another case that I worked reminded me so much of this. And it was a neighborhood case where high dollar, people living at $3, $4, $5, $10, $12 million homes, professional golfers, et cetera, they were being targeted for robberies. So they knew exactly when they were gone, et cetera, et cetera. And how it all came around was... literally the person that ended up doing it wasn't even connected to the neighborhood, but they knew somebody that was. And so that person had talked about the wealth and all of this, and now it's being talked about around bad guys, and bad guys get together and say, oh, this is perfect. We're going to start hitting these places. So it made me wonder if there was that it's tangential,
tangential. Yeah.
Yes. It just sounds weird. On the side like that. In other words, did they come on to Nancy because of something like that? A handy guy that worked with her that talked about it to somebody else. And then it finally gets to the criminal element cousin and his buddies, something like that. But I think either worked. The one thing that I'm stronger than ever, though, about kidnap for ransom of Nancy targeted for sure now. Because now we know the verbiage in there.
When we're trying to parse all of this together, and try to figure out if this thing or where this goes, and trying to figure out what is legitimate here, what is not legitimate here. Other than, there seems to be a string, one piece here, one piece there, that kind of connects over there, this kind of connects, that kind of, we still haven't gotten to any sort of place where we know the actual source of this. There's no proof of life. There's no proof they even had her. I mean, even like, not even just, here's her body, something like, are you at all surprised that there's all this money on the table, and if somebody does have her, access to her, or knows where she's buried, if that's how, like, nobody's come forward in any way, shape, or form to even attempt this, to get the payout, whether that be somebody who's heard about this through leakage or somebody who might be able to garner some sort of a deal here of, yes, I'm involved, but my involvement can also then lead you to this greater swath of people who are doing this to far more people, taking more down. What do you think is going on there in terms of who knows what and why no one has spoken yet, if this is beyond just a single mope or something?
Well, just putting, myself in the place of a bad guy that has any involvement with this, all I can see is an electric chair in my future. So yeah. There's no chance I'm coming forward for any of it. And I know they say, oh, it's anonymous. No, the Bureau is in the business of making sure that somebody who did this is going to get $1.2 million. So,
So how do you think it is that they haven't been able to track down who sent these letters or have any leads on it or from at least from what we know?
Did you see what I tell you what Howard Bloom said was very interesting? Again, all of his is source related, and his sources, whoever they are, told him they have the IP address, but that it is masked in some way. So we hadn't even heard that before. I had never heard an IP address even mentioned. Anything like that was known. So that's, again, from Howard Bloom.
Well, wouldn't anybody have an, I mean, if you got an email, you have an IP address. Doesn't mean it's not through a VPN or something that's masked. I mean, but there would be an IP address that comes from an email. Otherwise, you're not getting that email.
No, I totally agree. What I couldn't figure out, well, what I'm hearing when I hear that is, in other words, if it's a Proton, you know, account from another country that you can't trace.
Yeah.
I thought, well, they might not even have an IP address, but my understanding, at least from what he's saying, is no, they have the address. And it just doesn't lead. Yeah, it ended up being a dead end. So, and the other thing is these portals that are intake portals, you know, I'm not 100% sure how that is. I need to do it, right? We need to reach out to Tucson and TMZ in their intake portal and see how that process works, because I've never done it. And that's where these notes came into. These weren't email to email. This was communication to portal.
And how many people, because again, I can't even imagine looking at Mope Porch Guy being anywhere sophisticated enough to do anything like this. So you're still thinking there's at least one other person that might be the brains behind this, Jen?
I really do. And initially, no, it wasn't until those notes were legitimized by the outreach by the family. That's when I really said, wow, this is, it's organized, because look at what's happening. Look at the fact that they set up a Bitcoin account without being traced, which is harder than you might think. Secondarily, the IP address that can't be traced. Third, no one was able to get anything from that camera, almost as if they knew if they plucked that camera. I mean, it was really by the grace of God, 10 days later, that Google was able to unravel that. By the way, I am now pretty much leaning toward the fact that with him, with the holster and without the holster, is the same event.
Not two different days.
Same event?
Same, yeah, right. Not two different days. Let me put it more clearly.
Yeah, because that was questioning first of like, is this, and how they don't know this, and how, again, this is, that's a little nugget of information. It's like, how do you not know that based on the metadata of the video? I mean, I would think authorities know that. Why they wouldn't just tell that information, I don't know. Maybe there is a reason that that has not ever been officially explained. And while we're all sitting here having to guess if this is from the same day or not, I would think that would be helpful to put out into the ether of people trying to figure out what the hell's going on here, since they haven't solved anything in this yet.
Well, I think it's two different ways that that was stored. In other words, there's the picture and photographic data. And separate from that are timestamps and things like that. It's two different ways. And I'll tell you who said this and has been saying it, I believe at least twice, for what it's worth, is Nanos. He has said over and over, we don't have the timestamps. So... And I tend to believe that because of how it's stored. You know how it's separate? Like, you get your picture, but then you can reset the time on it, right? I can put any time I want on my system. I can tell it, you're going to say whatever time I pick. Mm-hmm. I set my system up that way. So time is separate from pictures.
But this was accessed from the cloud, this data. So, I mean, that's the thing to me on that. Like, there, when you put the data in, the data is going to show you, and even if your clock is off, you're going to see a separation on time if there's a separation on time. It doesn't seem like that's the rocket science portion of this to determine if these are from 2 days apart or 3 days, whatever the hell is a week apart, or all at the same time. You would be able to see how it's stored on the server, when it came in, when it logged. It's there. It's data. I don't see a world in which that element doesn't, is not somehow stamped onto wherever they were able to pull this out of. You know, it's not like, well, we're going to go into the big room with the computers, Bill, and it's on ticker tape, and then we're going to, like, that's not how this is a file. That it would be there.
I know what you're saying, and yeah, that's the whole reason, you know, for being suspect with these being two different days, because yeah, how are they digging through? And I think it's on my part, the lack of understanding. Like, I need to find a Google expert, mm-hmm, not an FBI agent, you know what I mean, that even works cyber, because they couldn't do it. They needed a Google expert to explain how possibly they could get this data. And now they've explained it, at least, you know, how they've explained it is that it's like an onion, and right, they peeled down and they were lucky to capture this. To your point, were they all right together, these images, or were some in this part of the onion and the other one way down here? That would answer, at least if there's a hiatus.
Yeah, I could certainly be wrong, but understanding how data is stored, I mean, it's just basic stuff. I don't get how they wouldn't have that information. I'm assuming they do. They just haven't revealed it, is my guess. I don't know. I mean, it adds to the confusion, the curiosity, and all of the questions that are in this case. So many questions on these letters, but we got more to get to on the Nancy Guthrie case. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube as we continue it.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.